From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. On this National Day of Mourning, the Bush family joined with many of our nation's leaders at the National Cathedral to pay their final respects for America's 41st president, George H.W. Bush.
And we're going to miss you. Your decency, sincerity, and kind soul will stay with us forever. So through our tears, let us know the blessings of knowing and loving you, a great and noble man, the best father a son or daughter could have. And in our grief, let us smile knowing that Dad is hugging Robin and holding Mom's hand again.
That was President George W. Bush. Following the service, Bush's casket was flown back to Texas for burial. President George H.W. Bush was 94 years old. Coming up, could the Mueller investigation be moving toward a conclusion? Yesterday, Special Counsel Robert Mueller filed a long-awaited sentencing memo regarding his criminal case against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. In it, he recommended Flynn not receive any prison time after he provided prosecutors with, quote, substantial assistance. We'll get the latest details from Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs. Also, French President Emmanuel Macron is in retreat after riots over steep increases in fuel prices have rocked Paris. The massive increases were a part of the Paris Accord climate change initiative. It is once again clear that the public is not driving the climate change hysteria. So who and or what is? Dr. Cal Beisner with the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation is here with some answers. And in recent years, wedding vendors across the country have faced the unacceptable choice of violating their religious beliefs or losing their livelihoods, all because they will not use their skills and talents to affirm or facilitate the creation of Supreme Court-created same-sex marriage. Later in the program, we'll talk with FRC's Director of Religious Freedom Advocacy, Alexandra McPhee, about a new publication that the Family Research Council has published highlighting this threat to religious freedom in the marketplace. And we'll be taking your phone calls as well on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. To find out more, check it out. All right, the sentencing memo was handed down last night by the Department of Justice Special Counsel Robert Mueller in his probe. He suggests that no jail time be given to Michael Flynn. Flynn is President Trump's former national security advisor. According to the special counsel, Flynn has participated in 19 interviews. Last year, in December of last year, he pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his contact with the Russian ambassador during the presidential transition. With us now is Congressman Andy Biggs. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona. He is a member of the House Judiciary Committee and the House Freedom Caucus and has been tracking the Mueller investigation. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right, what have we learned new? There was a lot of information redacted from this filing, but what do we know from the sentencing memo?
Well, the one thing we know is that apparently General Flynn was cooperative in the extent of the number of interviews that he gave. We don't know what that consists of because of the redactions. We don't know what may happen next for anybody else because of those redactions. And I think there is so many ways to spin this, but the bottom line is we know that, in my opinion, that there's no collusion. And there's never been an allegation of collusion. There's never been an indictment for collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians and trying to affect the 2016 election.
Now, we're over two years into this. What we now have is really the only charges that have been brought or the pleas that have been given really are in regards to perjury, nothing of the substance of what this whole investigation was about.
Well, Tony, let me just make sure everyone understands, we're not even talking of crimes that rise to the level of perjury. So for General Flynn, for instance, it was a process crime in that he didn't have a consistent a story. So somewhere along the pike, he told what was a lie. And so he went before court and said, I lied. Remember this, he's not sworn in before a body. He's not, right. It's not even a deposition. So it's not, right. Doesn't rise to the level of
correct.
Perjury.
And so that's good. Let's explain that, because these crimes that we've seen thus far is lying to an FBI agent, or in other cases, lying to Congress. It has not been the perjury that like you would have in a courtroom.
So exactly right.
Thanks for that correction.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Tony. And so I look at this and I say, of course he wouldn't be doing jail time. So there's a couple of ways to look at it. I heard some of my colleagues across the aisle say, well, you can be sure that he's given some pretty substantive damaging material against the president or whoever Mueller's investigating. Or you could be do it the way I do, which is I say, wait a second, this was a nothing charge anyway. Nobody typically goes to jail for lying to an FBI agent. It's
right.
It's not a normal thing, actually. You don't see this routinely. Prosecuting a lying to the FBI agent when there's no other crimes related to it. And here we have an isolated incident, and it's been reported that General Flynn felt that his family was in jeopardy, and so he went ahead and took the plea even though he felt he wasn't guilty.
You would think that by now that if the special counsel had been able to put together a solid case against the Trump campaign that it would have been forthcoming, but thus far, we've seen nothing. How much longer do we think this is going to go on?
Well, we've heard now for the last 6 months that his conclusion of this investigation was imminent. But this is what you get, Tony, and I think it's real important to understand that your listeners understand. This was not a normal prosecution or investigation where you have a crime or criminal conduct suspected, so you investigate the crime or criminal conduct, and then you develop who committed those acts or those omissions that might be criminal in nature. Here, instead, Mueller was charged with investigating Donald Trump and his campaign to see if they could formulate any kind of crime against President Trump or his campaign or any of his associates. And so that's just like a broad brush, and there was no time constraints put on it. And so now we have this 2 years later with a bunch of process crimes and or things that were done like Manafort. His was a tax problem, or actually a filing.
Totally unrelated.
Unrelated. Yeah, from 10 years before President Trump ran. So Tony, what we've seen, in my opinion, is a gross abuse of power and conflicts of interest. I mean, you have Rod Rosenstein. We get back to him. He's the guy that's supposed to be supervising this investigation, and yet at the same time, he is a witness in these issues. And as you know, we're hearing Mueller wants to go after obstruction of justice. They're going to have to find some unique legal theory to go after President Trump for obstruction of justice. But again, Rod Rosenstein would be the guy who's supposed to be monitoring this investigation. At the same time, he would be a witness in anything like that.
Congressman Andy Biggs, a couple of questions come to mind. Okay, how, if this continues, in January in the 116th Congress, you have the Democrats will come into the majority. Certainly they will seek to exploit this. How might they do that if the Mueller investigation continues?
Well, some have recently suggested, and I don't think this is a wrong thought. It may be wrong-headed, but I don't think it's a wrong idea, that the Democrats are going to take the Mueller investigation and try to cultivate that to impeach Donald Trump. That's what and we've already seen it. You know, Jerry Nadler is going to be the incoming chairman of Judiciary. He's already talked about the cultivating impeachment of Trump and Kavanaugh and investigating dozens and dozens of other people. And so I think that's where my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are going to turn. They're going to try to use whatever Mueller discloses as a basis to try to impeach President Trump.
That brings up another question, then, because this is not the first time that the special counsel office, special counsel, has been used. It was used back during Bill Clinton with his thing with Monica Lewinsky. Do you think, and if this plays out as we think it may at this point, where all we end up with at the end are process crimes, a lot of money spent, a lot of energy diverted. Do you think that Congress might revisit the whole provisions for the special counsel that we might see that limited and restricted in the future?
I would like to think we would revisit that. I would like to think that we would see more transparency, for instance. I mean, if you were going to have a special counsel, I don't know if you want to do away with that entirely, but it's not really.
Well, I think you can't have it open-ended as it is.
It's exactly.
A fishing expedition.
Exactly. I think if you're going to have it, you have to put the constraints on it that should be there, both temporally and also whatever your subject matter is. And we haven't seen that done.
Even as a former police officer, I think about the limits of the law in terms of if I make a traffic stop, there's certain things that I can't do. Even though there might be a crime that's committed, I have to go through certain
yeah.
restrictions that keep me from looking in their trunk. I've got to get permission to do that, or I've got to get a warrant to do that. So it just seems like there's no limits to what a special counsel can do.
Right, and that's the constraints I'm talking about as far as subject matter and process as well. And what we've seen is there's been no oversight really from the DOJ, and they're the ones that are supposed to be overseeing it. So there's a problem. Then you have, some of these things should have been and could have been investigated in-house by the Department of Justice, but you had the pressure politically for Jeff Sessions to recuse himself, which he did. And then you had his subordinate, Rod Rosenstein, step in, and Mr. Rosenstein had his conflicts of interest and yet pressed on anyway, right? So this has been a real problem at every level, both process and substance, and now as we near 2 years, temporally as well. And it's done exactly what you said, Tony, earlier when you said it's cost a lot of money. It's been a major distraction, and it's taken a lot of time and energy. And I just, President Trump has soldiered on and done, in my opinion, a remarkably good job for someone who's been fighting this for 2 years.
I'm not quite sure how he has done it. I think now, with the Democrats coming in the majority, that we're going to see a new level of hostility. I don't think anything would satisfy them. I'm a bit concerned about Matt Whitaker as the acting attorney general, how they're going to harass him with hearings and investigations. And even when there's a new attorney general that is nominated and hopefully confirmed, that still won't satisfy them. I don't think anything would.
No, and it gets back to why we're in the situation we're in. Remember, a group of people came out and said, we want to impeach Donald Trump the day after he was elected. They did
just
not like
him. They're trying to
figure out how to do it. Yeah, yeah, that's right. And that's what they've been searching for. They're still so mad that he beat their chosen candidate. That's what it's about.
Congressman Andy Biggs, as always, great to have you on the program. Merry Christmas, my friend.
Merry Christmas to you, Tony, and your listeners.
All right, thanks so much. Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona, great guy. Check out his website. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, coming up next, mayhem in the streets of Paris. What was behind it? Increased fuel prices. Why? Paris Climate Accord. We'll talk about that next with Cal Beiser. Don't go away.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, known as SOCE, claiming that they are fraudulent, ineffective, and harmful. But are they? LGBT activists claim that sexual orientation is immutable and can't be changed by therapy or counseling. They also claim that people who attempt to change their sexual orientation end up more depressed and suicidal. As it turns out, studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are in fact very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. For a thorough analysis of all the major studies done on the effectiveness of SOCE, visit frc.org/SOCE. Again, that's frc.org/SOCE.
Are you ready to take a stand? Now you can with FRC's new Stand Firm mobile app, which allows you to stay engaged and informed on the most important issues facing our country. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on issues of faith, family, and freedom with just a tap of the screen. Listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, and much more. Join Christians across America as we stand firm together. Visit frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, I was really kind of amazed this morning. I was reading the paper, was reading an article from the Washington Post, and I'm going to quote from this. France's protesters are part of a global backlash against climate change taxes. Quote, the single most effective weapon in the fight against climate change is the tax code, imposing costs on those who emit greenhouse gases, economists say. But as French President Emmanuel Macron learned over the past 3 weeks, implementing such taxes can be politically explosive. On Tuesday, France delayed for 6 months a plan to raise already steep taxes on diesel fuel by 24 cents a gallon and gasoline by 12 cents a gallon. Macron argued that the taxes were needed to curb climate change by weaning motorists off petroleum products. But violent demonstrations in the street of Paris and other French cities forced him to backtrack, at least for now. Joining me to talk about it is our good friend Dr. Cal Beisner, founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. Cal, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. Poor Monsieur Macron. You have to feel sympathy for him. He really got hit on this one. But he's finding out that, you know, when people discover that fighting climate change actually costs them something, suddenly it's not quite so popular anymore.
Exactly. And that's the point. It's not the people clamoring for this, because they, when they hear all these, when they see the results, I should say, of all of these, rhetorical, all of these speeches, I'll get it out here in a moment, all of these speeches that are painting these portraits of doom and gloom and all these promises that they're going to do all these great things. But the bottom line is, when it's going to cost you more to get to work or go to the grocery store or take your kids to soccer practice, all of a sudden, the public's not behind them.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Tony, of course, the UN Climate Summit is going on right now in Katowice, Poland. And, you know, the scientific evidence all points away from catastrophe. And yet the conference goes blindly on. Well, why is that? I think the best explanation of that came 8 years ago when Otmar Edenhofer, who was at the time a co-chairman of the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, he said, leading up to the climate summit in Cancun, quote, "The climate summit is not a climate conference, but one of the largest economic conferences since the Second World War. One must say clearly that we redistribute de facto the world's wealth by climate policy. One has to free oneself from the illusion that international climate policy is environmental policy. This has almost nothing to do with environmental policy anymore." End of the quote. Well, now, the summit is all about politics and not about climate, not about the environment.
Well, and that is really the approach that our neighbor to the north, Trudeau, is pursuing with his climate change initiative, which involves increased taxes on energy consumption, is a redistribution of wealth. He's going to give rebates back to people.
Yeah, and the big redistribution that's being talked about at the climate summits is not within individual nations, which is a problem enough. It is instead specifically from the developed nations in the world to the developing nations in the world, starting off with a $100 billion a year climate fund, and then growing from there to include things like what they're calling in these conferences loss and damage. That is, the developed nations supposedly committing to pay for damage suffered in developing nations because of climate change. But at this point, I mean, goodness, people are blaming thousands of different kinds of problems on climate change, including hurricanes, tornadoes, things like that that have been going on all through Earth's history. So now suddenly the United States is going to have to pay Indonesia if a typhoon hits there. This is the kind of thing that's being talked about. It's a pure effort at theft by the developing world, the mostly socialist developing world, from the developed, mostly capitalist world.
Okay. No scientific consensus that climate change is man-made. No measurable effect by the proposals that are being put out there. Again, we see no public support, no overwhelming public support. In fact, you can make the argument for the opposite. So what's driving it? Who's behind this? What's it about?
What's driving it really is efforts toward a new world order. The French president, I've forgotten now which one it was, but back in 2001, the French president at the time said that the Kyoto Protocol, which was the earlier version of what has become the Paris Climate Agreement, was the first step toward global governance. That's what these folks want, and it has been behind the whole socialist and particularly communist movement all along. I mean, Soviet Russia was committed to international socialism, and indeed embraced Marx's notion that socialism could never work unless it became global. That's been the aim all along, and it hooked its wagon to the environment, hooked its star to the environmentalist wagon a long time ago, back in the 70s and 80s, and now climate is the big excuse.
And this is why the left is enraged, because Donald Trump didn't have to wrestle with this. He just said, this doesn't work. We're out of this Paris Climate Accord.
Yeah, I mean, this was a no-brainer for the author of The Art of the Deal. He recognized that it would cost about $23.3 to $46.6 trillion for every tenth of a degree Fahrenheit temperature reduction at the end of this century by implementing the Paris Climate Accord. And he said, that's not a good deal.
Yeah. And it also makes no sense when you appreciate and respect the sovereignty of a nation, which is what you pointed
that's
out
right.
is at stake in this. Cal Beisner,
right.
as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks very much, Tony, and God bless you.
All right. Merry Christmas. Dr. Cal Beisner, to find out more about the Cornwall Alliance, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Don't go away. FRC has a new publication. We talk about it next.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect. Is Planned Parenthood a champion for women? In reality, Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading killer of unborn children. Despite this, they have been hailing themselves as the voice of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities today, their scandals continue to pile up. Planned Parenthood's current motto is care, no matter what. A more fitting motto would be profit, no matter what. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood. Again, that's frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Merry Christmas. So glad that you are with us on this Wednesday afternoon. You know, people of faith increasingly are finding themselves facing lawsuits along with censure and hostility when they refuse to renounce their religious beliefs on marriage and sexuality in living out their faith. And as believers, when we're called to live out our faith, it's in every aspect of our lives. Well, one of the areas where this conflict is most acute is in the wedding industry, where small business owners are being forced to make a choice between violating their faith and freely running their businesses according to their religious beliefs. Now, the conflict is often one of religious freedom versus laws that broadly prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. These are called SOGI laws. Now, these laws were originally intended to protect the civil rights of all individuals, but now radical activist LGBT interest groups are using them as a weapon to force their views on others, not just seek accommodation, but force these wedding vendors to celebrate something that they find, well, incompatible with their religious beliefs. Joining me now to talk about a new publication that was just published by the Family Research Council, Religious Liberty and the Wedding Vendor Cases, is Alexandra McPhee. Alexandra, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Tell our this is kind of not a comprehensive, but it does go into a lot of these cases and shows that there is a serious problem right now in America.
Absolutely. We spotlight 15 different cases that have arisen across the country where folks in the wedding vendor industry have been forced to make a decision between following their faith and maintaining a livelihood or shutting down their businesses. And the most prominent example of that has been Jack Phillips. Mm-hmm. He recently won a case at the Supreme Court when a same-sex couple sued him because he refused to make a wedding cake for their commitment ceremony because it would violate his deeply rooted faith. And his is not the only case. Fortunately, he won, but there are many others going on right now and are pending.
Now, Alexandria, the the history in the United States is that we have had a very robust protective firewall around religious freedom, and we've understood that that's fundamental. I mean, it's in our First Amendment to the Constitution. So this is I don't want to say that it's never been under attack before, but we're seeing, I would have to say, unprecedented attacks on religious freedom, to where we see this effort to kind of quarantine faith as something private and personal, not to be brought outside the walls of a church or our home.
Yes, it's quite a contrast from what the founders probably envisioned when they penned the First Amendment. And right now, these folks and business owners are being asked to privatize their faith, when in fact the founding fathers wanted to guarantee the right to religious liberty for all of our citizens and the right to free expression. But laws today are being abused in order to suppress the often Christian conservative voices that are really propelling these cases.
Now, Alexandria, this is, just to be very clear here, these vendors and these 15 cases that are profiled in the religious liberty and the wedding vendor cases, this publication just published, they're not objecting to the persons involved here. I mean, they in fact, I think every one of them, everyone I've spoken to, said, we will serve anyone. But it's the message around the particular event, i.e. the wedding, that they object to being forced to participate in.
Yes. Many of these people will happily serve anyone that comes into their store. And we saw that with Jack Phillips and with Melissa and Aaron Klein, both of whom you've spoken with and have spoken at the Values Voter Summit. But the issue is, like you said, they just don't want to be forced to celebrate an event they can't support in good conscience.
It's a violation of their faith.
Yes.
And we in America have long understood that a private citizen going into the marketplace can conduct his business according to his orthodox religious beliefs.
Right. And these wedding vendors are not objecting to the individuals who are seeking these commissions. They're just objecting to the message of a wedding, which they believe, according to orthodox beliefs, that marriage is between one man and one woman alone.
Alexandria, I know it's helpful when you see all of these cases in one place, because people will be dismissive of this case or that case, but you begin to see how widespread this problem is when it's all put together in a publication like this. How can people get a copy of this?
Well, folks can visit our website, frc.org/weddingvendors, in order to access the publication. And they'll be able to pull up the PDF file and take a look at all the 15 cases and the background for each of them.
All right. Alexandria, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Good work on this. And folks, if you subscribe to my daily update, I'll be writing about this tomorrow with links to the publication that Alexandria put together, Religious Liberty and the Wedding Vendor Cases. So if you're not already receiving my daily update, you need to do so. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, when we come back, today is declared a day of mourning by President Donald Trump in remembrance of our 41st president. When we come back, I'm going to take your phone calls. Maybe you watched the event at the National Cathedral, or maybe you have reflections on this day. I've got some of my own. We'll talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference? Now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together and advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just a tap of the screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, or read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for his kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect. Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer to these questions should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, claiming they are ineffective and harmful. But are they? Studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. To find out more, visit frc.org/SOCE.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow. It's beginning to look a lot.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. The federal government was closed today as it marked a national day of mourning for President George Bush, a recognition that coincided with his funeral. Several dignitaries and leaders joined the Bush family at the National Cathedral today for the ceremony. And, you know, it's not often that we have these days of national days of mourning. The President Trump, declared this day, along with it, the ordered that the flag of the United States be flown at half staff for 30 days, an expression of public sorrow. We heard earlier the clip, the audio clip from today's ceremony at the National Cathedral of George W. Bush, eulogizing his father, and it was a moving moment. I mean, one thing that I appreciate, and by the way, let me, phone lines are open, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. It was a couple of observations as I watched. I did not go to the cathedral. I had, could not, other obligations today, but the as I watch portions of it, to see the living president still there, to see people across the political aisle come together, it is moments like this where, as a nation, I think we should, and it's encouraging to see that we still do, that we come together to celebrate the life of those who have given themselves to public service. And there's a couple of observations I have and appreciations that I have for George H.W. Bush. In fact, I did have an opportunity to meet him a number of years ago. Did not know him well, but had a chance to meet him. I did have my first major television interview when I was a TV reporter back in the 92 election. I actually interviewed Barbara Bush, which was kind of it was interesting. Very nice lady. Very, very nice lady. What I really liked is the Bush family and the how they put such an emphasis on family. And you saw it today in what the second president, George Bush, said about his father. And that's refreshing. And Barbara and President Bush, always together. It's refreshing to see that, and it's encouraging, and it's the nation is better off for those types of examples. And now, I didn't agree with all his policies. I was not a big fan. I thought he was a little too moderate, but that's beside the point. Grateful for his willingness to serve. And it is, I said this on Monday, kind of the end of an era, last of the World War II generation to serve as president. And just a selfless, very selfless in the way he lived. And anyway, I say the number one thing that I commend them for is their focus, not in words alone, but in actions when it comes to family. All right, let's go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Francis in Georgia. Francis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I just want to say, hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yeah, I want to say some good things about President Bush. He was my commander-in-chief when I served in the Air Force. He was a good commander. He was a good president. He was a good man. A great impact on my life because today I'm a disabled veteran, and he's the one who made it possible for people like me with disabilities to live life to the fullest. So he's had a tremendous impact on my life as a young man and as a grown man. So I just want to say to him and his family, I appreciate him a lot for everything. He was a good president. He was a good man. That's it.
Thank you, Francis. I appreciate those thoughts today. Let's go to Kenny in Oklahoma. Kenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for your program so much. Do you know, did former President Bush Sr. support homosexual marriage? Because I just don't see any way possible. I know the Word of God says with God nothing is impossible, but the Word of God also says a lot of other things, that you cannot die with sin in your heart. So if President Bush Sr. died believing that homosexual marriage was fine, I do not believe he entered into the kingdom of God.
I don't know. I don't think that I never heard him say anything about that. I mean, it wasn't an issue when he was president, and I don't recall any subsequent comments. I wouldn't think he would weigh in on that after he left office. So, Kenny, again, as far as I know, I don't think he ever spoke to the issue, at least publicly.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Kenny, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Check on that. I don't think he did. What was interesting, though, on the issue of life, because I was thinking here on the social issues of that day, really abortion was still a very difficult. It was a challenging topic for Republicans. I mean, in that when he ran for president, there were still a number of pro-abortion Republicans, pro-choice Republicans, whatever you want to call them. But you juxtapose that to the last presidential election, 2016, where there were 17 Republican candidates and only one that embraced a pro-choice position. In fact, in the 116th Congress coming in, I don't know of any openly pro-abortion Republicans. That's how that has progressed over time. Now, he went through kind of an evolution himself on that issue because he used to be on the wrong side of that. But in 88, I believe, with Dukakis, he was asked a question in the debate about life and said that, you know, he, looking at his two grandchildren, if I'm recalling correctly, I'm just by memory, which were adopted, he said, you know, that's what formulated and just brought to clarity to me, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, the life issue and the sanctity of human life. And his policies from that point forward were, of course, he served under Ronald Reagan, who had pro-life policies, which, you know, he obviously supported. But then on his own as president, he supported pro-life policies. So anyway, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Travis. Travis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony. Good to speak with you again. I was curious. I noticed there was a heavy emphasis on HW's character. You know, people on both sides of the aisle constantly talk about how, you know, even if he was more moderate on certain things, he always had a great character. He was a good person. I was wondering if you thought maybe Trump was being attacked during some of the comments made, since there was such a heavy emphasis on character, because, you know, even if Trump is pushing policies that are more to the right that we prefer, his personal life has obviously had its difficulties, and his character comes under attack pretty often, and he's not quite as presidential as most people would want him to be. I was just curious your thoughts on that. Thanks.
I think there's no question, Travis. I think that certainly for some was part of the motivation to lift up one while using it to bash another. There's also the factor that, look, he's 94 years old. He's been out of the, I want to say public eye. He has remained visible but quiet once he left office. And, you know, the things that he did that may have been controversial back then have been forgotten, and rightfully so. I mean, look, when someone is, you know, when someone leaves this world, you know, I think in most cases there is the ability, especially for someone who's in public service. I mean, I think I could find something positive to say about almost everyone who is serving in some capacity. I mean, if it's just almost everyone. And so I think people lay down their gripes and their differences, and they celebrate what was good about a person's life, especially when there's been so much time passed since they held office. All those things are true about George Bush, but I think with time, the differences fade away, and the character, the positive character traits become more pervasive in our thought and thinking. And I think it was easy to do with George W. Bush. He was a, you know, he talked about this in his speeches about kind and gentler, and he was, you know, he came across that way. He was kind. He was gentle. I go back to their family and how family, extended family getting together when he was president, when, you know, his son was president. I mean, they were just, family was a big deal to them, and you could see the grief on George W.'s face throughout this. I mean, he's really mourning the loss of his father, and his father meant a lot to him. And that, I can relate to that. And it was again, an expression of how important family was. And George H.W. and Barbara were the leaders of the family. They held family tight together. And I think that's, especially in this day, when, you know, not everybody has that. It was something that people looked to. I think it was inspiring to people. I think it was a great example. I do think that some took the opportunity, to Travis's point, to use that to try and bash President Trump. I mean, he's ruffled a lot of feathers from a policy standpoint, and so they are coming back on him any means possible to try to discourage him. And I tell you, what amazes me, and this is one of the character traits that I would say about President Trump that I would have to say is a very positive, is that he is unrelenting. He will not give up. And that's amazing to me that he continues to, in the face of such strong resistance, vehement opposition, he does not give in. And I find that remarkable. I find that kind of courage refreshing. Again, may not agree with him on everything, don't agree with some of the choices he's made in his life, but I will tell you this, I admire his courage. And the same I would say for, you know, in for others who have served. But he's in the office of president. Donald Trump has shown and displayed tremendous tenacity and courage to follow through on the promises that he made. All right, let's work in a couple more calls here. Let's go to Ryan in Oklahoma. Ryan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I was just calling because I'd like to extend my condolences to the Bush family. And I would just like to say to the other caller that called in from Oklahoma about the homosexuality thing, that we as individuals are able to use the commandments to refine ourselves in our walk with the Lord. But it's not our in our capacity to judge his mercy towards another person's heart. I'm very appreciative for the Bush family and their service that they did for our country. But the Lord uses those in whichever manner that he sees fit. So for his mercy to extend to someone else, it's not my place to judge that. So I just wanted to call and say thank you for your show and, again, extend my condolences to the Bush family.
But thank you, Ryan. Thank you for the call and for those comments. You're right. God has displayed truth in a standard which we are to live by. What is in another man's heart and his standing with God, you know, we can look at fruit. We can make an estimation. But ultimately, it's between him and God. And I say we need to pray for all of our leaders. In fact, we need to pray that in America, that we have a spiritual revival, which is what we desperately need, and that is to come to an understanding of the truth of God. For Jesus said, it is the truth that will make you free. And when we look at freedom and those who have sacrificed so much to gain that freedom, preserve that freedom, but the core of that, the heart of that freedom, the foundation of that freedom is the spiritual freedom. That's why Western civilization is really what has protected and promoted freedom. But if we lose the foundation of it, that is the freedom that comes in Christ, how do we sustain it? And that only comes through the gospel, that people can be free from their sins and their past and be in a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, his Son, which is why we celebrate Christmas. This is the time of year we celebrate the fact that Jesus came to earth as a baby, but came as a Savior for all of mankind. Now, all it requires is for us to receive him, confessing our sins and receiving forgiveness and eternal life. We'll all one day stand at the doorstep of eternity. But what we do now decides where we go. Until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. He says, you've done everything you can do when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.